You're too damn white, guys.
Welcome back to another Too Damn White Guys. I'm Julian Smith.
I'm Andrew Ritter.
And today we are talking about all the places where nature says no, but God says yes, and vice versa. I think what's interesting to me about this is, you know, I grew up in the south of America, not South America, to be clear. But, you know, religion is a huge part of the culture in the south, and I'm very familiar with the Bible. I grew up with it. And there are 613 commandments in the Bible, specifically the Old Testament. 365 of them are things that are discouraged, and 248 are encouraged. And what's interesting about this is...
That's one per day.
That's one per day, right. It has to do with the solar year. You picked up on it.
Oh, really?
And 248 is significant of the amount of bones and main organs in the human body, which is crazy that they knew this back then.
Yeah, that's got to be coincidence. It's also very similar to the Venusian year. So the Mayans had two calendars. One was based on a 220 or something day that was based on Venus.
Really?
Another was based on the sun, 365, yeah.
Yeah, it's also hard to know, like, you know, what the original Jewish Bible, how many laws were originally in there and stuff, because what we have now was like redacted and stuff like that. So maybe it was whittled down to those numbers much later once we like actually knew how many bones were in the body and things like that. Like you couldn't expect pre-agricultural humans to know this stuff. So
could count them, but yeah,
that would take a long time.
Mostly vivisection or dissection was prohibited though, based on religious practices.
Yeah, that's true. That's true.
That's another example.
Mm-hmm. But I guess what I'm interested about this is, and you said this is yours. I'm going to steal this, Andrew. You said, is religion healthy? And I think that's kind of the angle. It's like, it's not necessarily should you be religious. We're not going to try to convert you or deconvert you. We're just interested in where God says yes and nature says no and vice versa. Before we do that, you should tell me the news.
Yeah, sure.
Andrew tells Julian the news.
So really sad news, Notre Dame Cathedral, I'm sure you heard, basically burned down. Yeah, pretty bad. That's built in the 1200s, so super old. The planks were from hundreds of years ago, so you can see, you know, they were probably dry. People don't usually get up to the roof, and they were doing some construction on it, so there were people nearby. I guess their preliminary investigation shows there's probably a spark, so it wasn't anyone's fault from faulty electrical connection, which, I guess... maybe is someone's fault.
Depending
on the wiring and stuff like that. But anyway, big tragedy. It's beautiful. I think I've been there three times. Yeah, it's beautiful.
You've been three times? So, I've only been once.
Yeah. So it's interesting that we're talking about that in the religious thing. And people were talking about how the cross survived. So it's kind of an act of God. But of course, the melting point of gold is like 1,000 degrees Celsius, and wood fire burns at like 600. So that's actually the reason.
But, sounds like an act of nature, if you ask me.
Yeah, it's an act of science.
Yeah, it's funny. My wife and I were looking at pictures of us in Notre Dame this week. There's several pictures of us in rooms that are no longer there, and I'm just like, it's just so crazy and sad that like. What are they going to do? Are they going to rebuild it?
Yeah, they're planning to rebuild it. Apparently, Apple pledged some money, maybe, or something. So it's going to be the Apple Cathedral.
The Tim Apple Cathedral.
But I mean, people are going to chip in, and they want to rebuild the roof within 5 years, I guess, restore it the way it was, not make improvements, but because you don't really improve upon old things like that.
Yeah, that's very sad. Very sad that it burned down.
Researchers at the University of Amherst, Massachusetts, have discovered that cats can play fetch like dogs, you know, go fetch the bone or the ball.
Really?
They just don't want to.
Surprise.
This is actually consistent with all cat research, which shows that cats are basically as smart as dogs, but they just don't want to do stuff, whereas dogs are, you know, pleasers, basically. They want to please you, but cats don't give a crap.
I think that makes them smarter than dogs, actually. There was a study that showed that people who prefer cats have higher IQs than people who prefer dogs.
Oh, really? Uh-oh, that's bad news. I prefer dogs a lot, but anyway.
Well, there's exceptions to every rule, I guess.
Well, so dogs are not that great at problem solving, except they're really, really good at using tools, and the tools are humans. So they know that you know something, but they don't know something.
Right.
Which is actually pretty remarkable. So the real benefit or real advantage that dogs have is they're great communicators. Like they can read your face and they can read human expressions. They basically are bilingual. They speak human and dog. So human body language in dog. Yeah.
Yeah, cats have no emotion. They're almost reptilian, it seems like. They're like,
yeah,
just like,
or at least they come across that way. Yeah.
Yeah. So what else happened?
We did a triple landing of the Falcon Heavy boosters. We had a launch last week, which was really important for my mission. And we launched Falcon Heavy as the second launch ever.
Congrats.
SpaceX, that is, and landed all the boosters. One kind of was damaged on the way back to port, the center core, but really spectacular success. And it was kind of a nail biter.
Was the launch that happened on, let's see, was it last Wednesday, the same launch that they brought the boosters back from?
Thursday, yeah. Yeah, it was the same. Yep.
Wow, that is amazing. Yeah. That was a big,
yeah, you can watch videos of it,
big deal.
Yeah, it's the biggest rocket in the world, operational. Yep.
Awesome. Insane. Really, what important. A huge success.
Mueller report was released this week to the public in a redacted version, and people are making jokes about with all the redactions. It does, like, it spells out never gonna give you up, never gonna rickroll or whatever, never gonna tear you down. What is it? Never gonna run around and hurt you.
I love anyway. It when you sing.
I don't think the redactions were that big a deal, though. And actually, people are saying that it portrays, not necessarily criminality, but certainly raises a lot of questions about the involvement of the Trump campaign. I mean, it basically confirms Russian involvement in the election and says, well, obviously the Trump campaign was kind of hoping to benefit from it, but it's unclear if they were criminally liable or criminally involved in it.
So, I'm still unsure what the whole, like, accusation of Russia interfering with the election is. Is that just because they were, like, putting propaganda out to uneducated voters or something like that?
Yeah, mostly. That's a big part of it, for sure. They bought tons of Facebook ads and swamped Facebook with, you know, pretending to be Americans or whatever, posting basically pro-Trump, anti-Hillary messages.
Wow.
On Facebook and Twitter and things like that. So, yeah, absolutely. And trolls. They had, like, people posting comments on everywhere on the internet that were, like, basically pro-Trump, anti-Hillary comments and things like that. Yeah.
That is crazy. So shall we talk about nature and God?
Yep, sounds good.
All right, let's start. I've got a list here going of it. It's kind of split up into different categories. The first section is things that God says to do, commandments of things you should do, that kind of goes against what we see in nature and science. And then the second section is things God says not to do, sins, which, you know, contradict nature. And then we're also going to look at a couple of the Ten Commandments. I think the most obvious one is big families.
Yeah. So you mentioned this, and I guess there is kind of that request by God, I guess, to go out and be fruitful and multiply.
Yeah.
So the rules of religion, I think, come from cultural practices that were favored at the time when the rules were written down. So I think, like, if you have Leviticus and the rules of Judaism, then those were probably things that people thought was a good idea at the time.
Right.
So what we're really talking about is things that maybe are not such a good idea anymore. But even as of 100 years ago, basically, infant mortality was much higher, so it made sense to have larger families.
Right.
It doesn't make as much sense in the context of most babies surviving, but for the majority of human history, most babies died within their first year, more than half. So this is kind of the reason why big families, and also from an economic standpoint, it used to be an asset to have large families because the kids could work on the farm. So
100%, they
wouldn't sell them into slavery if you needed to, if you got in hard times, basically.
Yeah.
So children were worth something, but now it costs over $100,000 to raise a child. It's like crazy expensive.
Mm-hmm.
So it doesn't make sense anymore. Living in cities and you have to buy a bigger house or get a bigger apartment. Whereas in the past, they could just kind of, like, especially in the Middle East, they could just kind of, like, sleep in a shack on your farm, right?
Yeah.
It's a lot easier. So this is the main reason why, as people become more affluent and move to the cities, they tend to automatically have fewer children. But you're right, it's still kind of like a religious thing. I guess a joke is in Ireland and in the Catholic Church, right? Because the Catholic Church theoretically bans birth control. Although I think if you're married at this point, they don't, which is kind of odd if you think about it, because
that is kind of
odd. It would be more important if you're not married. But anyway,
right.
They don't condone sex out of marriage anyway. So,
right. Yeah. There are several verses in the Bible that encourage big families, but the most famous one is Psalms 127:5. Blessed is the man whose quiver is full And it's kind of an analogy of like a quiver full of arrows. Like it's actually kind of a funny verse.
When you think about it. It's very sexual, actually. It's kind of interesting. Yeah.
It's like it's totally in line with what you were saying about how the kids were kind of like assets. It's like if one of them dies, you've got a couple more. It's not a big deal. You got a quiver full of arrows.
Redundancy. Yeah.
So.
Wait. So the quiver, is that referring to actual kids or is that referring to the male reproductive system?
No, the quiver would be like your house and the arrows being full of kids. Gotcha. Or the arrows in the quiver.
That it was more sexual than it was.
Right. Right. But it's also kind of, it's got some environmental implications. I mean, it's not, we know that the projections of the world population are hoping to level off around 11 or 12 billion, but that is based on people having fewer kids now. And I don't, you know, we're not trying to tell everybody what to do with their families. If you want to have 12 kids for whatever reason, you live on a farm or whatever, that's your decision. But in general, I think like what we're saying is that it's not going to be sustainable for everybody to have huge families. And like you said, it's not even economically sustainable for an individual family to have some of these, you know, this many kids because it's just so expensive. So,
mm-hmm. Yeah. Something that occurred to me is medical treatment. So not all religious people, certainly. In fact, the definite minority of religious people would have some kind of prohibition against medical treatment. The Church of Christian Scientists, which is kind of an oxymoron to some extent, they avoid all medical care, theoretically, although they've scaled back on some of the rules. If vaccines are required by law, they're allowed to get them and things like that. And they're allowed to use very basic medical care, but they maintain that prayer is the most effective form of medical treatment, which is conclusively not true based on a number of studies that have actually examined the role of prayer. Although people would argue sometimes that, well, if you study it, then it doesn't work while you're watching, which seems a little bit crazy. But anyway.
Are they doing these studies with like priests or something? Or how are they doing these?
Well, they're doing studies on patients in hospitals who have serious illnesses and the control is no prayer. And then people who have a lot of people praying for them do not actually have better outcomes generally. Or there's at least no measurable difference. So, yeah. But yeah, there's some obvious examples of Jehovah's Witnesses and, you know, who theoretically, in some cases, refuse medical treatment and stuff like that. Obviously, not a good idea.
It's like, as we covered in a couple of weeks ago, I mean, medicine is the only reason, it's the main reason life expectancy is increasing and people aren't dying as much. So why would you abstain from medicine?
Yeah, if you're looking at ways to keep people alive. I mean, medicine has had the most impact of anything. Medicine has saved vastly more lives than the prevention of war, for example. Way more people die of diseases than they do of even soldiers in military conflicts until the First World War. The First World War was the first time when more soldiers were killed by enemy action than by disease. Hmm. So like in the Civil War, the American Revolution, throughout history, armies have lost a lot more soldiers to disease than they have to enemy action, like battles and stuff.
Wow, I didn't know that.
And so obviously then, you know, the impact, if you count the civilian impact, is just astronomical. Yeah, medicine has saved vastly more lives than almost anything humans have ever done.
Interesting. So the next thing that God, I guess that one is actually kind of a sin, I guess. So that's not totally in place with the things God says to do. It's okay. We're gonna do another one here of something God says yes to. Proverbs 3:5 is a famous verse. Trust in the Lord with all your heart and lean not on your own understanding. But this is, you know, we all use our minds every day. This one should have probably been first. We should have led with this one because it's kind of overarching of the whole thing, but it's like, you know, we all use our brains every day to stay alive. You have to learn. If you value education at all, you put your kids in school, you teach them things to get smart so they can survive. So, you know, this is clearly not some vacuum that we've been put in just to like test our faith. You know, it's like we are biological organisms that require strength and learning and knowledge, and, you know, getting smart helps you.
Yeah, according to Science Magazine polls, human beings as we know them today developed from earlier species of animals. Just 45% of Americans indicated this statement was true. Only 33% of Americans agree that the universe began with a big explosion. So basically, evolution is severely questioned in the United States, as is the Big Bang. And I don't know how you would study biology or astrophysics with these beliefs.
Right.
I mean, they're basically incompatible with moving forward in technology and science and discovery. Like, if you're going to be stuck on a literal interpretation of the Bible, and it's not saying that religion and science never can coexist. It's saying that there's a general tendency of religion to maybe reduce curiosity. I mean, so I had this debate with my mom, who's just church religious, and she thinks that, like, you know, faith implies some kind of discovery or kind of thinking about it, and there's a lot of doubt involved and that kind of thing. But just the word, actually, the dictionary definition of faith basically is belief without evidence, right?
Oh, so really? That's
what
it is?
It's hard to argue that. Yeah, I mean, something pretty much like that. It's like not needing any kind of proof, right? And I think that we should need proof for things. Otherwise, we shouldn't believe them. And it goes along with, you know, believing what a politician says or believing what authorities say. You should be questioning everything, and you should look for evidence in your own lives. And so, yeah, having beliefs kind of fixed by what people say or having authority tell you the way things are is not a good way to approach questions.
Right. I'm looking at the definition here. Strong belief in God or in the doctrines of a religion based on spiritual apprehension rather than proof.
Right. Rather than proof. Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah, this is my big hang up with reading the Bible literally. And, you know, have somebody who I'm a person who grew up with the Bible. I read it twice all the way through before I was in my 20s. And, you know, reading it non-literally, just reading it as cultural memory has made it a much more interesting book to me. And I think there's so much more value that can come from it once, you know, you make that shift in interpretation. But, you know, this whole part, this whole recurring theme in the Bible of not leaning on your own understanding and just having blind faith really is a huge sticking point for a lot of people. And I think it's probably why so many people don't in America don't subscribe to the Big Bang and evolution and things like that, because they're just not supposed to trust their minds. But when you don't trust your own mind, you are being held back from growing and learning and becoming a better person.
Yeah. I mean, obviously there's examples of books being banned or textbooks being severely edited to remove elements of science and things like that. So this is another impact. You know, Galileo, his discovery that Earth is not necessarily the center of the solar system. I mean, that was a Copernican idea, but Galileo basically provided the proof for it.
Right.
The Catholic Church admitted that they were wrong about that in the last 50 years. So for about 400 years, theoretically, they maintained that Earth is the center of the universe. So.
We're going to take a quick break, but don't go anywhere. We're coming right back. I promise.
Yeah, I mean, so this idea of Earth or of this life being only a rehearsal for the afterlife, I think is one that's potentially dangerous. So, and I'm going to get to some good ones, actually. I think that there are actually some benefits to your personal health of being religious and a faith and things like that. Not to say that that necessarily means it's true, but definitely there are some benefits of being religious also. So, you know, if God, if everything's in God's hands, and this is something with climate change we mentioned earlier, but a lot of people don't believe that humans have the capability to impact Earth because we're such, you know, pathetic creatures compared with the majesty of God, right? Like, climate change is in God's hands, so we don't have to do anything about it.
Right.
Right. And also, if the end times are coming, what difference does it make if the planet, you know, doesn't have, that doesn't do well in the next 100 years, if the end times are within our lifetime, which people have, to a large extent, people have believed that throughout history. You know, in the 1840s, there was all these movements in America where people thought the end times were right around the corner. People have always believed. And I think it's kind of, people believe they're special, right? So you tend to think that the time I'm living in is the most important time, obviously.
Right.
Right. But any time in history is just as good as any others. Like, even before humans were around, there were billions of years with no people on this earth. Does that mean they're less important? Well, from our perspective, sure. But there's nothing special about the times we live in. And therefore, the end times aren't right around the corner, probably, unless we bring them about, maybe, through nuclear war or something like that. But I think that's kind of a dangerous idea, that we're living in the end times, so it doesn't matter what happens. And also, we don't have the power to actually change things and make improve the world on our own.
But it's also kind of that argument, not your argument, the argument that humans don't have control of what happens on Earth and we can't make an impact either way. It kind of shoots itself in the foot, because if this place is a creation, if it's God's creation, the God of the Bible, the Genesis creation account goes through like so much care and stuff that the creator put into it. So why would a creator create it just to let it go to shit? And, you know, like if he, when you create something, you care about it, you help nurture it, you facilitate it. So that whole viewpoint just shoots itself in the foot.
Well, it's the same. I mean, that's basically like a test, right? So it's the same thing with Abraham. God sort of asked him to kill his son, Isaac. And then at the last minute, he said, just kidding, right? And it's like a religious test, which is kind of a psychotic religious test. That's not very moral,
right,
to like make someone kill their son. And even if you don't mean it at the end. But
but we're not special, so it's okay to kill your children.
Right, yeah.
Now we've gone too far. Another thing, and we've said this a few times on the podcast already, but since we're talking about it here, the perspective that, you know, humans are incapable of making an impact here also doesn't incentivize us to take care of the Earth at all. I mean, if we're just going somewhere else, if this is all just a dress rehearsal, like you said, and we're going somewhere else after this, and this doesn't matter, then we are literally incentivized to destroy God's world, according to the Bible.
Yeah, unless it's part of the test, maybe. And if you are a good custodian of planet Earth, you will get judged worthy of going to heaven or something like that. There are some reasons, right? Religious people actually do tend to be, I think, more charitable because they think they're being judged, right? And obviously there's something to that. A lot of the French philosophers thought that society would break down if people weren't religious, because they'd have no one watching over their shoulder, kind of making sure that they were being nice, not naughty, right? So this kind of judge in the sky is, people have thought it's an important idea. Now, I think that recently we've come to understand that humans do have morality built into their genes. We've talked about this before with a few other people, because it benefits us to work in society with others, right? To forge relationships where we can mutually beneficial. So,
I
don't
animals.
Think it's obviously not necessary, I think, in my view, but that is a possible argument for it. Also, this transfer of responsibility is actually a really important psychological coping technique, which is another reason why actually being religious, I think, is relatively healthy if it's a moderate degree of religiosity, because thinking there's some guy who has your back, right? Or transferring responsibility
a woman.
It's not up to me, right? Well, theoretically, neither gender probably God is, right?
That's what I would think.
Transfer of responsibility and thinking, you know, someone's got my back through thick and thin, and there's nothing I can really do about it. Like, something I struggle with is I worry a lot because I think that, you know, everything in my life is kind of my responsibility and I have to sort out for myself. But if you have kind of this bartender in the sky who's going to listen to your problems every night, and you can kind of like transfer the responsibility, and that's a really important psychological coping technique, whether you're religious or not. It's something that you should try to do, is say, well, look, if I feel overwhelmed with problems in my life, then it's kind of not really on me. You know, whether it's true or not, it's psychologically healthy to be able to transfer responsibility and say, well, externalize it basically, and say, you know, I'm going to have help with this, or well, there's really nothing I can do about it. So just kind of be happy.
Kind of sounds like meditation, that transfer of responsibility.
Yeah, it's a very important
like
meditation technique. Exactly. Yeah. So there's something to that, actually. And
I think so too.
I've seen some studies where religious people are actually healthier because of these psychological coping techniques, basically. And I mean, it's also obviously the community support, right? My mom gets a lot of support from her church community. There's important aspects of it, definitely, that make people healthy.
So let's move on to biblical sins, things God says not to do that nature actually encourages. And let's talk about these differences here. The first one I've got is homosexuality. Why would God create animals with the potential to be gay, but condemn humans for acting on the impulse? Why would there be like bugs and other mammals and reptiles that can be gay? Yeah. You know, like it just makes no sense.
Yeah, this is the whole thing about God created us and then gets angry at us when we're not following the rules. But if God created us the way we are, then isn't not following the rules part of us that God created? This came up recently with Pete Buttigieg. Buttigieg, yeah, it's supposed to be, it is hard to pronounce. Mayor Pete, you know, the guy who's the Democratic, becoming kind of a celebrity almost. And I actually really like him. He has, he's pretty smart. Has a lot of great credentials. And he's pretty moderate too. Like he's Democrat, but he's pretty moderate and he appeals to kind of middle America and stuff. So that's really important. But basically he had this kind of online or in the media feud with Mike Pence, also from Indiana, where Pete Buttigieg is gay, but he's also religious. And he basically said, well, God made me gay. So if you have a problem with me being gay, take it up with my creator and your creator also, right? Which I think is a pretty good answer.
Yeah, that is a good answer.
Yeah, I mean, obviously some people would argue that being gay is a choice, but I think that there's pretty good evidence that it's not a choice and people are intrinsically just gay. I think it's also a spectrum, right? You're not gay or you're not gay. You're kind of like somewhere in between, right? And some people are more to one side, more to the other side.
And some conservative people say that that homosexuality is a sin that comes from the fall of man when Adam and Eve ate the apple. That was like the original sin, and then all these other sins kind of evolved out of that.
Yeah.
But that doesn't work because animals are apparently excluded from the capacity to sin because they're animals, and humans are like, according to the Bible, special creations that are self-aware. But like, you know, there was a recent study came out this year that said wasps can be gay. And like we've known for a long time that other animals can be gay. So it's circular logic.
Well, a lot of animals shift gender too. There's frogs and fish, clams, mollusks that actually change gender. Or, I mean, snails are hermaphrodites. They're both genders at the same time. All snails, basically.
They're going to hell.
So yeah, there's all kinds of, I think there's some animals with like hundreds of genders, which seems a bit bizarre. I don't exactly know how that works, but anyway.
Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. I mean, the whole idea that God created us and then made us imperfect and then we get judged for the way we're created, I think that's a little bit dangerous.
I do too.
Although, I mean, not to say that people shouldn't take responsibility for their actions, right? Mm-hmm. So I think that's important. I think like the idea is God helps those who help themselves, right? Is that in the Bible literally, or is that just something people say?
I think that's something that people say.
Yeah. Okay. But anyway, I mean, okay, but then can't we just help ourselves who help ourselves? Like, what's the point then? Right. Like to some extent.
Do you have a sin?
A sin? I don't know. This is not a sin. Well, like the whole sex thing. So, avoidance of sex or like sex in the dark under the covers and
sex
like,
before marriage.
This is related to how God made us, right?
Right.
If God made us as creatures who have sex and enjoy sex and have sex in a social context, like bonobos are the closest chimpanzees to us and they have sex all the time just for like strengthening family bonds and stuff like that. And they have all kinds of different gender, sex and all kinds. So I think that's in our nature as humans. And so to punish us for something that's in our nature and make it declare it a sin because I don't know why, maybe some people find it gross. Now, on the other hand, I think that's, you know, some of these prohibitions evolve from cultural practices because they made sense, right? You don't want people just going and having sex all the time no matter what, because then it creates a lot of problems and rifts in society, basically, where like there's all kinds of kids being born of uncertain parentage or at least uncertain. And then there's like a blood feud and then you have killings and blah, blah, blah. I mean, so they're enacted to preserve social harmony, I think. right? And they made some sense, and maybe they make some sense still. I mean, I'm not advocating that you should go around and just, you know, sleep with anyone at the drop of a hat, but...
Well, there's STDs to think about and things like that, too.
That, too. Nowadays, yeah. I mean, yeah, probably back in the day, they weren't as much of a thing, but yeah, for sure.
Yeah. This sex before marriage idea comes from the idea that sex before marriage is bad, I guess I should say, comes from this verse, Deuteronomy 23:18, do not have sexual relations with woman not thus married. And it raises an interesting question, which is like, how does this law pertain to all the people who were having sex before marriage was an institution? Because there was like,
yeah,
millions of years of sex between
humans. Well, they didn't know yet, Julian. So if you were born, like, this is the same argument that applies to people who had no knowledge of Christianity. Like, when the explorers went out and found other people who had no idea about Christianity, the church had to decide, like, so are these people have been sinning for thousands of years. Are they just going to hell, basically? Or, like, how do we rectify this if people didn't even know? Obviously, right. If they didn't know what God's rules were, they can't be expected to follow them.
Yeah.
Right.
It's true. It's a conundrum. What do you do?
But the whole punishment thing too, like an eye for an eye, that's probably a bad idea. It seems reasonable to some extent. When you first hear it, it's like, yeah, that kind of makes sense. Like fairness, yeah. Right? But really that just leads to blood feuds. If it's an eye for an eye, then it's an eye for an eye for an eye, for a leg, for an accidental stabbing that kills someone, for escalation into a blood feud that's, you know, this is why the state should be responsible for prosecuting criminals, not, you know, vigilante justice, right? Because we don't practice an eye for an eye, and we should not practice it.
Yeah.
And there's very good reasons, because it just causes escalation. And it doesn't help anyone. I mean, okay.
It doesn't.
It sucks that you lost an eye, but, you know, how will taking someone out? Two wrongs don't make a right.
Right. I think the ideal is probably somewhere between eye for an eye and turning the other cheek.
Right, exactly. Yeah, this was kind of an error that the New Testament tried to correct, in fact.
Yeah, it was overcorrection.
Jesus practiced the exact opposite, which is let anyone do anything they want to you, basically.
Yeah.
Which is probably not the right answer either.
Right.
Yeah, you're right. It should be somewhere in between.
So the next sin that we have is the cardinal sin of the Bible, rejecting Jesus as the savior of the universe. This comes from multiple verses, but the most famous one is Matthew 25:46. But what do you do about, again, this was kind of the same note on the last one, but what do you do about all the thousands of years of history before Jesus and the thousands of years of religious history in India and China before Judaism even shows up? What do you do about all those people? Are they just screwed?
Damned, yeah.
They're just damned.
Right. I mean, I think most religions have workarounds for this kind of thing. But, yeah, it's a big problem.
There's 4,000 years of religious history in India before Judaism even gets a book.
Right. And and the whole idea of, our religion being the best and the only answer, that's, you know, divisive, but it's also important. Like, religion's basically a meme. It's a cultural idea that spreads, and the more successful it is, the more it spreads. And this is right. Why, like, Christianity and Islam and stuff have been very successful. And I think a prerequisite of a religion being successful is for it to say that it's the only one, right? Because otherwise, anyone will just go off and do whatever they want, right? You have to claim exclusive truth, or else why should people follow it, right?
Well, that's kind of true, but the polytheistic religions that were prevalent before monotheism shows up they're not so exclusive. Like they have many gods. It's not about belief in one particular god. They may have like a way of life that they're condoning and trying to facilitate, but it's not like, it's not as exclusive as monotheism is, because monotheism is like, if you don't believe this one god created everything and everybody else is just screwed, then you're out, you're just out of the club, you know? And I think that the polytheistic religions are much more open-minded. It's much more like based on mysticism and things like that.
Well, that's exactly why they died out. I think this is exactly what Christianity outcompeted the polytheistic religions in the Roman Empire, basically, because it said this is the only religion. There was a time where they mixed, like in Scandinavia and Ireland and stuff. There are some churches that have both People were hedging their bets. They weren't sure which was kind of the correct one, so they kept their old gods, but also kept Jesus as one of the new gods.
Maybe their arm winds up in heaven.
Right. Well, they're hedging their bets. Like, either way, then they grow into heaven. They're either going to Valhalla or they're going to the Christian heaven. Like, right. Which one's true? And if I don't know, I'm just going to hedge my bets and do both. I'm going to worship both because I don't know. Eventually Christianity sort of outcompeted the polytheistic, that's a hard word, religions, because it claimed exclusivity. And, you know, this means you have to choose one or the other, which means you're going to have to shunt the other one aside. And it's kind of like it's a powerful meme, basically. And I think religions have to do this. And this is,
it is
religions,
yeah,
that are successful claim exclusivity.
This is exactly how Facebook beat MySpace.
Oh, they forced you to...
Well, you had
your
to...
MySpace account?
Well, no, you didn't have to delete your MySpace account, but you had to have an invitation and you had to have a .edu email address.
Mm.
It was like very hard to get a Facebook.
Oh, really?
Mm. Yeah, because I remember, were you ever on MySpace?
Never.
Never? I was on MySpace. I was all over MySpace. I loved it. And then I remember Facebook coming around and I couldn't get it and I was so mad. And then I finally got it and I was like, this is lame. And now I'm not on social media at all.
Yeah.
So let's take a moment to observe some of the Ten Commandments, shall we? I've got three here.
Sure.
All right, so the first commandment in the Old Testament is, you shall have no other gods before me. The Bible says Yahweh created the world, and, you know, this is kind of the overarching theme of the whole episode, so we won't spend a lot of time on this first commandment, but, you know, why would God create this world and then have all these laws that directly conflict with the nature of it?
Right, didn't God then create all the other gods?
Right, yeah.
If God created everyone and all the ideas or whatever, then God theoretically created the Norse gods and stuff too, right?
Right.
The Babylonian gods. But this is the exclusivity thing. So God, by definition, has to be a jealous God in order to enforce conformity and have, like, people just follow that one idea and stuff like that. You can't be loosey-goosey and have a religion. You have to be, you know, crack the whip on this.
Right. And then the second commandment, observe the Sabbath. Do not work on the Sabbath.
Right.
If God created the world for 7-day weeks, why were there so many calendars before the Gregorian calendar became the norm?
Because people always had to have calendars to figure out when to plant the crops. And by the way, they used to think that there were 360 days in the year, which is why we get like 360 degrees in a circle. Latitude, longitude, stuff like that.
Interesting.
60s. Basically, that's based on Babylonian math.
Yeah, but the point is the Sabbath is the seventh day. It's based on 7-day weeks.
Right.
So if you're supposed to rest every seventh day, what did people do when there were 10-day weeks? There was a 10-day calendar. How many calendars were there before the Gregorian that were like mainstream?
Well, a lot. And the Gregorian is an update of the Julian calendar, I believe, which was Julius Caesar's calendar, which, you know, got out of sync over the years because it didn't have a leap year, I guess. So Gregorian introduced the leap year to kind of fix the calendar. But there were previous calendars, certainly. The Babylonians, I think, had a calendar for planting. I mean, a calendar is just a useful, it's one of the first things people do is they look up at the sky and the stars, they look up at the sun. They understand the seasons, and you have to understand the seasons because if you don't, you're dead.
Right.
You have to know when to plant your crops, and you have to know when to hunt and when to harvest and all that kind of stuff. People invented a calendar completely independently. Well, I mean, maybe it was inspired by religion at the time, like some priests or something of Babylonian or other. There's Chinese probably a calendar. I'm not sure about that one. But certainly there was Mayan calendars, which we talked about.
Mm-hmm.
There was, you know, everything to do with the sky and the stars was considered kind of a divine religious kind of thing, right? Because it's beyond Earth and it's celestial and all that. Yeah.
Yeah. And then the last commandment we're going to be looking at is the fifth commandment. Do not dishonor your parents. But this one is tricky. I'm not saying anybody should dishonor their parents. I think everybody should respect their parents. But patriarchy is really flimsy today in modern times. You know, we're in America, the free world, and, you know, people don't always grow up harmoniously with their parents. So what do you do about that?
Yeah, well, this seems like a rule invented by parents. Just like God has rules so that people stay in line. Parents have rules so that their kids stay in line.
The common denominator here is social cohesion, I guess.
Yeah, that's exactly it. I think that most of these religious rules came about from cultural practices that were considered to be healthy to introduce social cohesion. And they became the rules of the religion, basically. And in order to lend themselves more authority, rather than just saying the emperor or the king, King Solomon wants you to do this, it's a lot more powerful if they say, well, God wants you to do this, right? And so right. It just lends a lot more authority to these rules. And I think that's the reason why they became commandments.
So you said that you don't think it's good when people cherry pick, but that you also think being religious to an extent can be healthy because some of these laws do have good, they do encourage good behavior. So what do you think about that?
Right. Well, I mean, I'm saying that it can be healthy to be religious, but that doesn't mean it's true, right?
Yeah.
So there's a disconnect between what I believe to be true and what, you know, if I could force myself to be religious or something like that, maybe it would be beneficial. I don't know. But, you know, as Buttigieg says, that's the way God made me. So.
Well, that was really fun going through all that. That was I enjoyed that. That was a fun little list. And I think there's probably more you could pull from these, but I thought this would be fun to go through. So hope you guys enjoyed it. This has been Two Damn White Guys on Where Nature Says No and God Says Yes and Vice Versa. And / is religion healthy? I think the answer is it can be a little healthy, but you gotta watch yourself.
Yeah, good discussion.
If you guys want to help us out, you can leave us a review on Apple Podcasts. You can also follow us on Twitter if you want. My handle is @JulianWasHere. Andrew's is @MarsRaider. And we do these episodes every Monday. We hope you come back next week.
Thanks for listening.